Hello and welcome to that Eurovision podcast, Eurovision with a slice of life. My name is Rory and I'm doing okay. I've currently been dying of some kind of illness, but it's not COVID, so I'm fairly happy about that. No idea what it is, but you know what? It's fine because I'm here to have my remedy, which is speaking to this lovely lot. So it's fantastic. And joining me.
Chelsea, I'm really excited to get into this week's topic. I feel it could get a little bit controversial, but we love that on this podcast. So let's just get into it.
Yeah, like this is that Eurovision podcast. Like it's always controversial in some way.
The only way how.
Hi, it's Rosie. And today I am joined by a very special guest who is not really a guest, will probably become a permanent feature. Unfortunately, I cannot show her to you, but this weekend, Lewis and I brought home a beautiful little black and white kitten. Her name is Ceridwen, after the Welsh goddess, and she's perfect in every way, and she's currently licking my fingers, and I'm very much in love. And she sat with me today while I was doing my preparations and watching for today's topic. So I hope she's been concentrating and may or may not have opinions to add herself.
Oh, she's so cute.
Can't get enough.
I'll put a picture on the Twitter. Like,
I am coming to like see her and then, oh, she's so cute.
Okay, Tim here. Not much is going on other than the fact that, you know, there's been a sudden resurgence of heat wave and I've had to drag my aircon up to my room. And if you follow me on Twitter, then you'd see my catastrophe with the vent, just because I don't have like a proper aircon vent in my room. So like I've had to literally stack up all of my DVDs up against the cardboard so it doesn't fly back. So, yeah, not much is going on. But before we continue on with our topic, I don't know if you'll notice this, if you're an original listener of ours, this is basically the OGs who are going to be leading today's episode. So hey. I'm going to let Laurie take it away.
We're good to go. What can I say? No. Also, we love to see a DIY king having to stack up everything in order to make sure that he's kept safe and cold.
I'm just going to say, it really feels full circle because it's what we're going to be talking about today, because it was kind of our first proper topic.
Kind of. A little bit. Yeah.
Well, I'll let Rory get into it,
though. Yeah, basically. But yes, so this week we are going to be sort of delving back into the archives and we are going to be looking at Eurovision 1998. So this is actually the first sort of pre-2000s year that we've actually looked at in terms of a retrospective. So that's fantastic. And it is a little bit of a full circle because our first episode was sort of a mourning for Eurovision 2020. So it's kind of nice to kind of come back to it and sort of realize that this is kind of our sort of average first year because I'm 1999. I think Jazzy and Rosie are fairly like nearby that as well. And probably Tim as well. So we're like, it's kind of the aggregate year that we all maybe would have started noticing.
We're all 95, Rory, except you.
Yeah.
Oopsie.
He's a Ben.
I am baby. Okay, I am baby. But no, so yes. So we are going to be looking at Eurovision 1998, which was the last time that the UK actually hosted Eurovision. And it was held in Birmingham. And it was hosted by Terry Wogan, the legendary, in quote marks, commentator for the BBC. And it was also hosted by Ulrika Jonsson, who is a TV presenter, but also had that kind of Swedish heritage as well. So it's sort of representing the international element of it. 25 countries from all walks of life took part, including the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia for the first time, or North Macedonia, as we know it now. And 25 countries competed, and the song that won it all was Dana International with Diva, bringing Israel their, I want to say, third victory. And fantastic. So let's just kick it off straight off the bat. What are your sort of initial impressions of 1998 as a year?
The songs are really, really strong. It was a lot stronger than I was expecting to be. I watched it for the first time early hours of this morning. So, and I was pleasantly surprised. I wasn't sure whether I was going to be as into the songs as I usually am. It had a very different feel to what Eurovision does nowadays. Obviously, they have the big orchestra, and I think it's the last year they had the orchestra, which I will get onto a little bit later on, because I think 1998 was a year that kind of really changed the contest and modernized it a little bit. I think Dana is a winner, is amazing. I think she paved the way for the contest to have a more accepting feel. I think before it was quite rigid and quite you saw a lot of ballads. You didn't really see many up-tempo songs. You definitely rarely saw them win the contest. And I think it paved the way for Eurovision to become a lot less rigid and become more of a party, more of a celebration. So I'm always going to be thankful that Dana won that year. However, if something hadn't been in, because if this is the first year for the televoting was introduced, I'm not sure she would have won had it been a pure jury vote. And I think this just changed so much for years to come. I think 1998 is quite a pivotal Eurovision in some ways.
Yeah, like similarly to Jazzy, I found it a really interesting year to watch in terms of how it marked so many pivotal moments in terms of the contest. And I've said before, the first contest I ever watched live was 2003, because that sort of makes sense with my age. And I've only really been engaging with the older contests through Eurovision again more recently. And it is fascinating to see how the entire aura and presence of the contest has changed, how it was such a rigid sort of formal thing previously. There was the orchestra, everyone was dressed up in their sort of nice gowns. It was in a 4,000 seater theater, and that would be tiny by today's standards, and all the audience were sat down rather than standing up and waving flags and everything. And it was absolutely fascinating to watch. I really enjoyed a lot of the songs. I did find there were some bits in the running order that did tend to drag a little bit. It did, for me, certainly take a little bit of time to get going. And I do very much appreciate producer-led running orders a lot more. However, I think there were some really, really strong songs this year. I think North Macedonia made a fantastic debut. I thought their song was fantastic. And the other thing as well, the postcards were utterly ridiculous. And I kind of love them, and I also kind of hate them. And I feel very conflicted about the whole thing. But I'm very much an artist-centered postcards person, I'll say that.
Same sentiment with Rosie, just because we're all born in 95. I didn't move to the UK till 2006. So the first contest I watched was 2007. I also watched the 1998 contest through Eurovision again. And what made me excited, or what made me happy about it, is just that, you know, right now, the UK, I don't know, UK is just like, they're not doing well. But, you know, if they did it right, like they did in 97 and won it, do it right. And when the contest comes to the UK, it's always going to be a party. Everything's taken very, very seriously. And also with the fact that when we actually, when they actually hosted it, there's that sense of nostalgia, but at the same time, they've kind of improved it and make it look a bit modern. So it's just like, you know, you're still sticking to your roots, but at the same time, you're trying to find ways to innovate, which is what I love about the BBC hosting it. So that's the one thing I miss. Another thing would be like, what else? Like, I mean, the variety of the songs were great, along with their genres. And also for the fact that, you know, it was still the era where you have to sing in your language. So that's another thing. All I'll say is like the televote was there. So, you know, it did pave the way, and there was a lot of changes happening on it, but I'm pretty sure we'll touch up on it a bit later on.
Yeah, I must definitely say that there is a lot of history within 1998 because it signaled the end of so much, but it also sort of signaled the beginning of the Eurovision that we know now, really. So this is the first year that televoting was sort of used en masse with everyone. It kind of feels a bit strange because they only really gave them 5 minutes of voting time as opposed to 15. And 15, well, 15 being pre maybe 2016. And since then, it's been about like half an hour or something like that. But it's crazy to think of it in that way. And in a way, I am really like thankful for it because, you know, this was the year that they were actually deciding to test new things. This was before Sweden sort of rose to become the new powerhouse leader. Up until then, it really was the UK that was the main pushing force for a lot of what was going on. In terms of the songs, I do really like a lot of songs that actually were here. You know, I was -1 year old when this was sort of broadcast for the first time. So again, I'd had a couple of people actually like recommend me songs from 1998. So I had seen a couple of them, but I hadn't watched the whole show until Eurovision again. And it was really nice to kind of actually discover the sort of gradual change, because everyone when it comes to Eurovision in the 90s sort of thinks of it to be like, sort of ethnic ballad, that kind of thing. And we did have that in a way. You know, my ones sort of first kind of coming to mind would be sort of Cyprus, maybe a little bit of Macedonia in there as well. But we also got to have, like, again, the last year that the orchestra was fully incorporated. So certain songs didn't even use the orchestra. My sort of first idea of that would be Greece. I think Germany also didn't have one. Surprise, though, if you were eagle-eyed, you would actually know that the conductor in the German thing, in the actual German performance, is actually Stefan Raab, who would go on to represent Germany in 2000 and actually host in 2011 and mentor Lena in 2010 and in 2011 as well. So there's a lot of things that are actually going on here, and it's really nice to just sort of get into it. So we might as well just jump in. What are some of your favorites from 1998?
I have a top three, which I selected. My number one is actually Israel. It's actually the winner, which I think's quite rare for me on this podcast. I don't think I rarely name the winner as my actual winner, but I just feel it was really revolutionary to the contest. I feel it's fun, it's upbeat. It's one of those songs that when it comes like on ESC radio, I find myself singing along to, even though I don't speak Hebrew at all. And it has that feeling of empowerment, especially for anybody that is part of the LGBT community. And I feel like it really paved the way for acceptance for them, like in the contest, because after that we've seen a lot more, the contest become more accepting of an audience, because I feel like before it was like just a sit down type of contest, but now Eurovision's became like kind of a party, and I really like that. A party, a celebration of all different cultures, and that I do like. I also really like Croatia, Daniela Martinovic. I felt like in the 90s, Croatia were a little bit of a powerhouse when you actually look at their results from the 90s or their results when they were part of Yugoslavia. And it's quite easy to see why, because a lot of their entries were like really good in the 90s. This one in particular is really beautiful, and it is really well staged. Like, she's in a pure white dress and it works really well. This is one of those songs that may have a little bit of ESC radio bias, because I've heard it quite a few times on ESC radio in the past. But yeah, the Croatian language is really nice to hear when it's being sung in, and I really like that. Other songs that I brought up quite briefly, the UK. Very different from what the UK was sending at the time. And it was a bop, and it deserved to do as well as it did. Belgium was quite funky, and it was quite easy to sing along to, even though I don't actually speak any French. The Netherlands, again, probably one of the more up-tempo songs of the night. And I feel like it's one of those that has had that staying power with the fandom. And you can see why, because it is such a bop. And then Sweden, I feel like I'm at like Carl Anken R by George Johnson. I really like those ballads in like Nordic languages, like, and they were doing really, really well at the time, and it was popular for that era of Eurovision. And yeah, it's something that I kind of would want to see back in Eurovision for the Nordic countries, definitely at least having them sing in their own languages again. It's something that you don't see that often nowadays, and it kind of makes me sad. It's something that I would want to see back.
Desi's already mentioned a few of the ones that I wanted to give a shout out to, particularly Edsley Rombly with Hemel and Arda. I thought that was such a fantastic song, and she gave such a strong performance. I think fourth was a good spot for her, but honestly, I would have quite liked to have seen her a little higher as well. I would have been very happy with her placing in the top three, I think. As well as that, I would like to give a shout out to Katarina Hasprova with Modlitba, a really beautiful sort of Balkan ballad, very underrated in the actual scoreboard. It's one of those songs that feels very timeless. It's aged really, really well, and listening to it now is just wonderful. It doesn't feel like it's aged a day. The other two that I'd really like to mention as sort of top favourites would be Finland with Ava, I think is pronounced. I'm sorry if it's Ava. So ethereal, so beautiful, such incredible instrumentation, and again, massively underrated. And the other one, which I think has aged, but I think I have a lot of nostalgia for the sort of music that it is, because it very much reminded me of what was popular when I was growing up, is Norway with Lars Fredriksson and Altid Sommer. It's proper sort of late 90s, early noughties, boy star sort of track, and I really enjoyed listening to it. Put a huge smile on my face. The other song I'm going to give a mention to, not necessarily because I think it was necessarily a good song, but because it brought so much energy to the stage, is Germany with Guido Horn. I know the song from a sort of meme perspective, but seeing it live and seeing it where it was placed in the running order, it brought so much energy and enthusiasm and joy to the stage. And again, it's similarly to Norway, it couldn't not make me smile. I just had fun watching it, and I know it's ridiculous, but it just made me happy. So I want to give a shout out to it for that reason.
Okay, well, for me, I'm going to go in an order just so I can get this out quickly. I have five, so that'll be a fair share of mine. Let's start with my fifth. My fifth one would be Estonia. Funnily enough, you wouldn't have recognized it was Koit Tum until you actually read it. I was just like, wait, that was Koit? And he looked very different, but also his song was very lovely. And the fact that this was in the early days where the ex-USSR countries were just getting their feet as well in the competition. So it was very lovely to hear Estonian in the competition, and would have preferred if he was a bit higher than 12. I have to say, you know, even he came back like, what, 20 plus years and still couldn't even get high. It couldn't even be his result. I feel so bad. My fourth one is Malta. Chiara with The One That I Love. Looking at it, she's had three entries in the contest. This is the one that sits in the middle for me. Angel is my number one out of the three that she sent. And honestly, I have to feel sorry for her, because she was like, I think she was in the lead when the voting came on. It was at the point where the final country was the decider for it. And Croatia did it. I think it was North Macedonia or Croatia, whichever one of them was giving out their votes. No one gave anything to Malta.
And that was kind of sad. It took her some time to get over that. And it is what it is. But I bet T, had it been a full jury vote, it would have been her or the UK. Who would have known? And the next three ones, obviously, it's already been mentioned, but I'll do them in order. Third will be Dana International, just because winner, and also love the song. And she's a great person. Icon. Second would be Netherlands, because Edcilia is the queen and she's very lovely. And, you know, she's already cemented herself into the Eurovision fandom. So, you know, Edcilia, if you want to come back to the competition again, feel free to do so. We'll support you all the way. And of course, surprise, surprise, my number one, pun intended, is the UK. If there was a year where you would have told me UK should have done a double, 97-98. Imani was right there, and it was really frustrating that we couldn't win on home soil. I bet you if I was alive and conscious back then, I would have been really annoyed and pissed off, but we'll have her to remember by, because she was the last one that we've had actually had a runner-up position. And it's frustrating that we're not hitting the right notes again, considering the fact that in the noughties, we're only top five, like twice in 2002 and 2009. So we haven't touched, we haven't been in the podium for some time. And the fact that this was the last song, it shows that, you know, if you put some effort, you can get something like that, but you're not putting the effort. So as Montaigne says, everything is frustrating.
Everything is frustrating, especially if you just live in the UK. And for more context on that, please read Rosie's editorial piece on the Daily Mail, because that was horrific.
It's not on the Daily Mail, it's about the Daily Mail.
Well, yeah.
Read it on that Eurovisionsite.com.
There you go. See? Self-plugging. We love it. Yeah, so a lot of the songs that I really love have already been mentioned. I absolutely love Slovakia, Katarina Hasprova, Modlitba. It was, before I even rewatched Eurovision 1998, this was the one song that I immediately knew of, and it was the one that that immediately stood out. It's mostly my kind of, you know, ethnic ballad with a bit more oomph to it, which I absolutely love. And it's such a shame that this was the last time that we saw Slovakia until about 2009. So, Slovakia, RTVS, can you maybe get your shit together, please, and maybe come back? Honestly, we love you. Also, I really do love the UK as well, which has already been mentioned. I have actually just shown this to my housemate, and she has fallen in love with it. She keeps singing it everywhere she goes, and I am so happy about that, because that was the best representation of the British music scene in a very, very, very long time, especially at the end of the 90s when, you know, trap was a very big genre that was going on at the time, a little bit of R&B as well. Also, not to mention, Imani was also the first person of colour to actually represent the UK in Eurovision before. So, and again, breaking boundaries. And it's fantastic to see that, you know, she has sort of been carrying on the legacy through, you know, Andy Abraham, Jade Ewan, Simon Webb, and so on and so forth. As well, I love Germany, the camp, the kitsch, the fact that he literally ran over to esteemed Eurovision host Katie Boyle, who'd hosted it God knows however many times, and was like, oh, I love you. Like, all this, like, fully, I don't even know what's the right way of saying it, sort of just, like, pandering to the audience, you know. That was the first instance of what the Eurovision would become in the 2000s, which I think is a very telling sign. And again, Finland. I mean, if you know me on this podcast, you know that I could love a good jaw harp, and there was a shitload of jaw harps in this, and I loved it. It was amazing. I loved it so much. Edcilia, again, fantastic. And one that actually hasn't been mentioned yet that I thought, oh, okay, maybe this might be good. France. Uale, I think it's very much ahead of its time, and it was paid dirt by coming second last. But she gave a very fantastic performance, and, you know, maybe it just wasn't the flavour that Europe wanted at that time, but it was sort of giving me a bit of Lisa Stansfield, like, been around the world, nah, yeah, yeah. It's like, it gave me the same kind of vibes, basically. But overall, I think the song quality in 1998 was fantastic. Not gonna lie, a little bit, like, I could pass on Dana International. I love everything that she stood for, but the song itself to me was just a bit, you know? But I was more than happy to see them, to see her win, because she stood up for everything that the Eurovision stands for, and that's what we love. So sort of 1998, like how we've been saying, has been a bit of a sort of transitional year into what we kind of know to be the contest now. Do you think that maybe what can sort of be taken from 1998 and sort of developed on further, perhaps? So, you know, should we have, again, a full televoting thing, or should there be only sort of 25 in there? I know obviously at the moment it's 26, but yeah, what needs to be sort of adapted from 1998?
I like the fact that there was still the orchestra there, and the fact that you can incorporate it. You know, some countries didn't choose to use it, but some countries like incorporated the orchestra within their performance, like the UK did, because you can hear like the violins within like the track. So I think giving them that option, but I think it's just because of like the cost of having the orchestra there, which is kind of like being a bit an issue. Another thing I would say would be, I like the fact that, you know, they've adapted they've took on the televoting, but I prefer our approach now where it's half and half, just because it just means that, you know, there wouldn't be an issue. There is what they would say is like a fair balance in terms of the voting. Another thing I would say would be, I really like the language rule, just because, you know, who doesn't want to be in the club, like, you know, singing in Swedish or Turkish or Estonian in the club when you're just like bopping along to some tracks, or even in German, considering their entry that year. But, you know, I really love the language rule. And I know that people are starting to veer off English again and, you know, singing in their native language, and then it's kind of helping them. But I think maybe just a little push, maybe do like a 50-50, like they do in junior. It works so well. I don't get why they can't just adapt it for this. But yeah, those are my thoughts.
I feel like one of the biggest things for me, and this is mostly because while I was watching the contest, I was also writing the aforementioned rant about the UK's attitude towards Eurovision at the moment, is really need to get that goddamn audience under control, because it was so depressing watching the voting sequence and the audience booing every time the UK didn't receive enough points according to them. I found that so disrespectful, and I know that in recent years they have started to implement this sort of anti-booing technology, particularly over countries that are somewhat politically contentious in any given year. And I sort of prefer not hearing the boos, but on the other hand, I'd rather they just weren't there at all. Like, as an audience, please show some goddamn respect for the artists, because they've all come and put themselves on the line and given you a fantastic show. So please do actually respect that and celebrate their successes. I am admittedly not in agreement with Tim on the language rule thing. I am very much anti this idea that language is the only way for a country to express their culture within Eurovision. And I think that there are plenty of entries that can do that and have done that without necessarily relying on language as the sole sort of arbiter of their culture, essentially. Saying that, I do like the encouragement of countries using their own language. So while I am absolutely against this being implemented as a rule, it is really nice to see. And I'm really hoping the success of native language entries in 2021 will show that it is possible to be successful sending something that isn't in English. And I would really like that to continue. I just feel like enforcing it stifles creativity rather than necessarily opening it up to people. And I think that's everything I have for that year.
I feel I am going to side with Tim on the language rule. I would want to see it back, just because I like to hear the variety of different languages in Eurovision. And I think like in recent years, the ones in their native languages have actually been doing better. And I like that, especially for like countries who just refuse to use their native language, like countries like Denmark, like Norway, like Sweden. Although Denmark have started to creep back in again. I think we saw it with Norway this year, where they had some really nice songs in Norwegian in their national final, and they translated them all to English because they thought it would be better. But you just have to take Tix's song. I think the song sounded better in Norwegian and it flowed a lot better. Like with his staging, you could have kind of still got the meaning of his song, especially when he took the glasses off, that he's like this outcast and he wants to be accepted. Like when he took the glasses off in his stage performance, even if he'd have still sang the song in Norwegian, you'd have still probably got that message from the song, especially with what he's wearing. And yeah, I'm with Tim on the language rule. I'm sorry, Rosie. Other things that I quite like, is that they obviously really introducing like the viewers being able to have a say in Eurovision, because prior to this they didn't really, and I feel like that's changed the contest for the better. I feel like if that hadn't been brought in, we wouldn't have seen winners like Sertab, because rap was just not something the juries appreciate. It's something they don't appreciate now. We wouldn't have seen Lordi win Eurovision, wouldn't have seen them in Eurovision, because rock, again, juries would not have appreciated that at the time. And also probably Ruslana as well, because like an ethnic dancey pop song, again, I don't know how well the juries would have received that. So I do think bringing in the televote was a good thing at the time, because it's paved the way for some really iconic performances that we've seen now. I was going to mention Netta, but she did really well with the jury as well in Lisbon. So I felt like it's so far and away from 1998. Maybe it's too late on to mention that, but I would kind of include Netta in that as well. That bringing the televote has paved the way for so many of these winning songs that I couldn't imagine us not having a say now.
Yeah, I think it's a fairly hard one to sort of pick many things out of, because actually a lot of the things that were tested out in 1998 have sort of become staple within the Eurovision canon, I guess. But I do think things that could be refined from 1998 going forward would be, again, the, like I said before, the extension of the voting time, because in 1998 they literally only had 5 minutes, and 5 minutes is not enough. If you think about it, if there was supposed to be a recap, that literally would have been the 5 minutes. And I don't know how you would have had the time to calculate all of it, that happening altogether, because each country is responsible for their own televotes, and then they send it over to the central thing, which verifies it. And for for example, like the UK, I think roughly had about like maybe 400,000-500,000 televotes or something within that 1 year alone. And to try and figure out where everything needed to go within 5 minutes must have just been absolutely so stressful. So it's great to see that they've given them a little bit more time to actually put things through, really. Another thing that I think may be worth sort of going down, I'm a little bit sort of on the fence with the language rule. So I do think that including the national cultural element is definitely imperative within a song contest like Eurovision, because you're literally representing your country. You are representing a culture, a nation, a group of people. And why wouldn't you want to sort of show off what you've got, you know? Of course, there is the element of commerciality, and that's the reason why we have so many songs from sort of the mid-2000s up till about 2015, where literally they just sound as if they're just Swedish and, you know, mass produced, those kinds of things. And I think taking it from here, a lot of the songs in 1998 were very much not that. And so I think maybe something going from that, there should be at least one cultural element in it, whether it be the language or some instrumentation or a fully sort of homegrown songwriting team or something like that, just because I think that would really hone in the sort of national element of it. Because, for example, let's just take a case study, Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan has refused to sing in Azerbaijani only up until this year. And this year, it wasn't even a proper, like, song. It was literally just the alam, alam, alam. I can't even do it properly, but, like, it's that kind of thing. So going on forward, maybe there should be some kind of homegrown team promoting the Azerbaijani music scene, because otherwise we could end up sort of seeing them doing another 2018 and again and again and again or something. And I think the other thing that I think would definitely be helpful going forward is to not have the presenter do the commentary at the same time. So for those of you who don't know, Terry Wogan, like how we said at the start of this podcast, was also known as the legendary, in air quotes, commentator for the UK from the 80s up until about 2008. And when he wasn't presenting, he was providing the BBC commentary. And so by doing that, he's kind of like showing his bias. And that's something that we'll never, like, we will never get to have again, to be honest, because the way in which that it can influence the voting and things like that. So, for example, Nikki Tutorials only was able to give her favorites a shout out after the contest was over. So there needs to be some kind of thing going on from there. And I think the only other thing from 1998 is just to stop any potential faux pas happening. So maybe get the presenters to do their research on the people who are giving out the points, not looking at anyone in particular, Ulrika Johnson. So, to be honest, though, if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't exactly know how bad that was. So if someone can fill me in on why that was so bad, because I knew that it was a bit awkward, but it, like, everyone was like, oh my God, what is this? So, like, can someone enlighten me, please?
I read it on Wikipedia yesterday and I'm just getting it back up now.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
And I'm going to read what it says. Okay. Ulrika Johnson, Ageism Row. In a BBC interview, future Eurovision entrant Nikki French said that one of her most memorable Eurovision moments was Johnson's infamous faux pas during the voting. On hearing that the Dutch lady announcing the votes had previously been a contestant in Eurovision, Johnson replied, "A long time ago, was it?" Which was followed by much laughter from the audience. In fact, Corey van den Bos, who sang for the Netherlands in 1965, said that she had gone to the contest many years ago. Unfortunately for both van den Bos and Johnson, this wasn't heard above the noise of the audience. What was heard, however, was Johnson's seemingly insulting comment. So it seems like it was an accident and that it just wasn't heard on TV. But who knows? And again, I've got this off Wikipedia. I read this last night, so I knew where to find it. So,
yeah, because just looking back on it, I think it's just a genuine question, because, like, she literally didn't know what the situation was. She didn't know when she had performed before. So, why? I don't know. Maybe this might just be me sort of like it just going over my head or something. But.
Like 1965 to 1998 is 32 years, so it is a long time ago.
Exactly.
So if she's heard that she competed in Eurovision in 1965, then yeah, that is a long time
ago. It is a long time ago. So I don't know. It just seemed like a bit of a strange thing.
Or is it just because of, like, the fact, like, you know, I think it's just the way we say, like, a long time ago, was it? It's kind of like, it's just the way British people talk. And
yeah,
I think that, like, non-British people wouldn't get that, because that was my case when I moved here in 2006, where I was like, what on earth are they saying?
I don't think it's that bad, but maybe it is. And it's just maybe I'm misreading it. But what I'm reading on here, it doesn't sound like it's that bad.
I just think it's a clash of culture here.
Yeah, but please correct me if I am wrong and she did say something insulting. So,
yeah, I guess the idea is that it feels like she's calling her old and saying that she looks old, which you could interpret it that way. I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily the best at reading people at the best of times. So, yeah, I could see why people might interpret it that way, but I don't think it necessarily has to be interpreted that way.
I think overall, and maybe it was just a case of miscommunication and misunderstanding. So it'll just go down in one of those sort of like histories.
Awkward moments.
Yeah. Watch it be on like a Watch Mojo top 10, something like that, or Eurovision, like, thing like, oh, when Eurovision gets awkward, or something like that.
I mean, I didn't watch it until, like, I didn't even, like, know this had happened until yesterday. I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's something that completely passed me by, so.
I mean, to be honest, it just was at the time, I just remember when that kicked off, I was like, oh, okay. Obviously, at the time, I mean, I was minus like 8 months old or whatever at the time. So you know what I mean? But yeah, so kind of to wrap things up a little bit, what can the BBC do to like improve its hosting if it ever gets to host Eurovision again? Because Lord knows that could be an impossibility with the way that things are going at the moment.
Oh my God, where do I even begin? Okay, first of all, have someone who actually likes the contest as the host. So it, you know, 2021's an example. Nikki Tutorials loves the contest. Edcilia Rombly took part. They were there and they brought a lot of insight to the competition. So my best bet for this one would be Rylan, just because we know that he can host and he loves the contest. So I'm not going to be surprised. Second of all, if you can, pretty, pretty please, just because the UK fans would love this, please host it somewhere where you can fit us all in. Just because I know that as a UK fan, I would want a ticket package to that and I would not mind attending it and I would pay good money for that. So, you know, whatever the biggest indoor arena you can be, like, you know, Match Friends Arena for all we care for Metlo. That's how much we want this to happen. Like, you know, just put a roof over Wembley and put some good acoustics on there.
Like we don't care if the FA Cup final's the same day. Move it. Let us go to Wembley.
Exactly.
You can have your football match some other time. Let us have Wembley for a fortnight.
For 6 weeks. We don't get that, please. But yeah, and one final thing would be, I want to say host it in London, but, you know, boost the tourism up north. So Rory's already like raring for Manchester, which I think would be perfect. So, you know, please do whatever you can, that's all I'm saying. Be nice and, you know, take care of the fans. We've waited over, like, I think at this rate, it won't be for 30 years until we could host it again.
Yeah, literally. Sorry, go on. Literally. But the only reason I don't want it in London is just because I don't like London. Like, I have a very high anti-London bias here, just because I love the North.
Like,
so
I feel like ideally you'd have it in Wales, because, like, Scotland have hosted it, England have hosted it, Wales have not hosted it.
I mean, neither is Northern Ireland. Imagine if they had it in Belfast.
That would be very controversial, but something I kind of want to see happen.
dangerous playing.
I don't mind flying in my own country just to go to Eurovision.
Exactly. Could be worse.
I think definitely not having the same person commentate and present, that would probably be a pretty good piece of advice, I think. And other than that, It's difficult to say, because the contest has changed so much, so I don't quite know how much they can take from 98 to bring to a present day contest. so much of the format is so established now, and it's very different to what it was back when the UK was last hosting. And I feel like at the moment our best bet is to try and get Australia to win so that we might possibly be able to host if they win. But other than that, yeah, I think it should hopefully be a huge celebration when it can make it back to the UK. And it's the same thing I'm hoping to see with Italy this year. It's been 30 years since they've hosted. They've been in the contest since the very beginning. And yes, they did have that break in the 2000s. But yeah, I am looking forward to it hopefully coming back at some point in my lifetime. I've hopefully got another 50 or so years. So please get it back here at some point.
If it was to be used like that, I think that would be the only time that I would be okay with people singing It's Coming Home, because at least then it would be for something that actually would happen, and it wouldn't mean that everyone would be absolutely subject to racist abuse, but time and a place. Yeah, I think there is a few things that could be taken from their hosting in 1998. Obviously, this is that when they were hosting it was, like I said before, a transitional year, so they were kind of just working out the kinks of what the modern Eurovision would be. So what I think could be sort of improved on is just to sort of tweak a few things. The main thing, I guess, is just to make sure that the contest is actually presented in a very positive light, because as we have seen many, many times, the British public and the British media and Eurovision are... they have a very strange relationship, to say the very least. So to be able to see, sort of show off the pro side of the Eurovision in the UK, I think would be fantastic. Like I just said, I would love to have it in Manchester, just because London has hosted it far too many times anyway, because the UK has hosted it the most times in the world, or in the history of the contest. So it's time to give it to someone else, basically. So Manchester hasn't had a go yet. Birmingham has. Harrogate has. Who the hell has been to Harrogate? Honestly, I don't think so. Edinburgh has also had it. I think it's time that we have a little bit of a switch up. And in terms of hosting, definitely get people who are involved in the contest, who are very interested in it, but don't get Graham Norton. Graham Norton has had history of hosting a Eurovision event already, because he hosted the Eurovision Dance Contest in 2007-2008. And his hosting skills in that were lackluster, to say the least. So I think a very good combination could potentially be Mel Giedroyc, who is a fantastic performer. She's a comedian, actress. She's hilarious. She's hosted the national final in the UK for so many years. I love it. And I think another person to host it potentially that would do really well would be Emma Willis, because she is very strong, a very capable presenter. She has a lot of fun. And I think that's something that we need to sort of push forward in the UK narrative. You know, show it off in a positive light, but be fun about it and don't take it too seriously, basically. So I know there's a lot to sort of take on from there. Who knows whether or not the BBC will ever get a chance to actually host it again. If they do, Lord knows, we might be dead by the time that happens. You never know. But yeah, so kind of just to wrap things up, do we have any sort of final points on 1998?
Yeah, I think it's just something that I did want to mention, because I don't think it's been mentioned yet, was the interval act, which I really liked. I liked that it showed off different aspects of British music with like all the different instruments that we saw. I liked that it showed off Britain as a multicultural society as well. Like, you had the Indian and African dancing, and it highlighted, and it's something that I would love to like kind of see with Italy in 2021, because I feel like Italy has a lot of different cultures. It also has a rich musical history. Like, bringing back the orchestra maybe for an interval act, like, it's something I would quite like to see. And I just feel it's something that hadn't been mentioned, which I thought deserved a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah, the interval act was absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is sort of the era post-Riverdance, so countries are very much trying to sort of, not necessarily one-up it, but to sort of bring their own take on it. And yeah, it wasn't quite as enduring as that, but I still think it really worked in showing off different aspects of British identity. And I think the other point to add, based on what Rory said, you can't have Mel Giedroyc without Sue Perkins. It's just impossible. So Mel and Sue to host, please. Rylan in the green room. I will be a very happy person.
For me, all I'd say is I like the way that BBC hosted it. You know, it just shows that, like I've said earlier on, that if you care about something and, you know, if you get given the opportunity to prove yourself, they did it well. And, you know, despite some hiccups along the way, I think it was they got through it with no major hiccups, other than the fact that, you know, Donna was a little bit late getting into the stage because she had to put on the feather. But other than that, I think if BBC does it on the 21st century, I'm excited to see what that's going to be like. And I really, really hope it's not going to be terrible. But I know the BBC have got the resources to pull off a Eurovision hosting gig in 2020, in the 21st century.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, fingers crossed, we will be able to be alive when a BBC actually does host the contest. I mean, I know you guys will have been like, oh my God, 1998 was the last time we hosted it. I still have never been alive for any of Ireland's ones, so... That in itself just goes to show, like, I'm technically from the most successful Eurovision country, but I never got to see any of the results and the success, so I don't know. I just do like 1998 as a year. I think it's just one that does seem to get a little bit underrated, especially sort of in the wake of the 90s and everything. So I think definitely we should have more options, really, to sort of go down. And, you know, I know, obviously, every year there's going to be new fans that are going to be like, oh my God, you know, like, let's just watch the 2000s ones. But honestly, if the further back you go, the more interesting songs you will get. So definitely worth doing a little bit more digging and just seeing what else is there other than just a typical, you know, Lena, Loreen, like, kind of thing. You know, there's more to Eurovision than just that. And if there's nothing else, then I guess that sort of takes us to the end of this edition of That Eurovision Podcast. I'd really like to thank Jazzy, Rosie and Tim just for, you know, taking ourselves back in time to Birmingham. Obviously, that was the worst Birmingham accent I've ever had in my life. But you know what? You're all right, bub. That's about as good as we're going to get. So, So in the meantime... if you want to sort of follow us and know like what else we're going to be doing in terms of podcasts and in terms of like actual stuff as well, please follow us on all of our social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at That Eurosite. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. So subscribe, follow, all of that stuff so you always get notified for whenever new episodes come out. And yeah, in the sort of coming weeks, we will be continuing on with these kinds of things just because we're starting to enter the national final season again, which is mental because it literally feels like yesterday since the final was taking place and already we're having to get ready for yet another season. I am not prepared. I don't know if you guys are. it's going to be a lot, but we're here and we're all going to get through it together. So it's going to be fine. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. So shall we all say goodbye?
Goodbye.